Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective. Due to the sensitive nature of today's topic, discretion is advised for younger listeners.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and I'm excited today to be continuing our discussion on human trafficking with members of Ho'olanapua, which is a nonprofit organization in Hawaii that's committed to the prevention of child sex trafficking and providing care for children who've been exploited. Today, I'm joined by Tim Hitchens, an experienced social worker who moved from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to Hawaii 3 years ago. Prior to moving to Hawaii, Tim spent about 11 years with Philadelphia's Department of Human Services as a frontline worker and later as a supervisor, as well as their administrator for their after-hours hotline. Tim also taught undergraduate social work and did some work with the homeless population and community building. Tim is now the education program manager at Ho'olanapua. Tim, welcome to Behavioral Health Today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity to be with you today.
Very good. It's really nice to have you here with us. You know, in our continued conversation with your organization, our topic today is addressing the guys and gateway traps. Those things that we may not realize can actually be contributing to sex trafficking. But as we start out the conversation today, and prior just to getting into that component of the talk, can you start out for us defining how to best understand what sex trafficking is and the mindset you'd like us to have as we come into our talk today?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you again. So I'm going to start by reading the federal definition of sex trafficking. That'll get us sort of on the same page, and then I'll break it down in some terms that might be a little bit easier to understand. It certainly helps me to have a better concept of what we're talking about.
Great.
So the federal definition of sex trafficking is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, obtaining, patronizing, or soliciting of a person for the purpose of a commercial sex act in which the commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform the act has not yet attained 18 years of age. And then the commercial sexual exploitation of children, or CSEC as you'll sometimes hear, is sexual activity involving a child in exchange for something of value or the promise thereof to the child or to another person or persons. So again, I'll kind of do this in reverse because it helps me to understand it. We'll start with what defines a commercial sex act. A commercial sex act has two parts. One, a sex act, and two, anything of value. And a sex act can include intercourse, oral sex, anal sex. So those are some of the obvious ones that may come to mind, but it can also include sexual touching, sexually explicit massage services or escort services, stripping, pornography, masturbation, sexting, sending nudes or topless or revealing photos through text message, email, any of the online application platforms. So those are all considered sex acts. Then you add something of value and it becomes a commercial sex act. Things of value are obviously cash, jewelry, a car, a cell phone, a second cell phone, gift cards, somebody paying your cell phone bill, someone paying your rent or your utilities, popularity. Yeah. But you know, if you haven't eaten in a little while, McDonald's has great value. If you've been sleeping on the streets or in a park, a couch or the backseat of a van has tremendous value.
Yeah.
So then you start mixing things and you do get cash for sex, but you also get things like oral sex in exchange for a place to stay. You get sending nudes or topless photos in exchange for someone providing you with a cell phone and then paying the bill. So there's a broad range of things that are considered commercial sex acts. Now, if there's force, fraud, or coercion, or anyone under the age of 18 involved, it becomes sex trafficking. So that's where you're breaking the federal law. So anyone under the age of 18 engaged in the commercial sex act is a part of a sex trafficking situation. But again, it's bigger than that too, because it's not just the person involved in providing the sex act or the person receiving the sex act or the person providing the item of value, whatever that may be. It's also anyone involved in the recruitment, which includes grooming, the harboring, which lets someone crash on your couch or lets someone participate in this behavior in your hotel or motel, the transportation, providing, obtaining, patronizing, and soliciting. So those last four, provide, obtain, patronize, and solicit. I'll give an example where I was talking in a high school and there were two high schooler boys sitting side by side. And I said, suppose one of you somehow has nude or revealing images of your girlfriend. And the other boy asks to see them. And you say no initially, but then your friend says, let me see those pictures. You've been talking about them. I don't believe you. I'll give you $20 if you let me see them. At this point, your friend has solicited by asking. He's patronizing by offering money. And if you do this, you'll be providing sexual photos that you have obtained. Right. So technically, you just trafficked your girlfriend.
Yep, got it.
Now, the final big element about all of this is the demand drives it. So it's very easy to think of this as a woman's issue, as a female issue. And that doesn't even speak to the fact that this happens to young men too. There are certainly young men who are exploited, but the demand drives it. The urge to buy sex, the urge to participate in these behaviors drives it. I just talked about some of the things that are involved in a commercial sex act. It can include stripping and pornography and things like that. But there's quite a lot that we don't think about in how we're contributing to the demand. And that's really what started this conversation for me with guys.
So this is a part where you're talking about that is really focused for us guys, maybe to understand what you were referring to earlier around these gateway traps. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. When I was thinking about these gateway traps, you know, when I hear this term, I think of gateway drugs, you know, those drugs that are often considered safe to use, innocent, thought to be non-addictive, maybe almost benign. But what we've learned from research is that these seemingly innocent gateway drugs actually open the door to the risk of more serious drug use. And it sounds like it's the same kind of gateway traps you're talking about here that can contribute to the sex trafficking.
Yes, it's accurate. There is research to support this too. There's a great entity called Demand Abolition, and they did a survey a couple years back that ran from 2016 to 2017, and they surveyed 8,201 adult males across the U.S. So there's some good news from this study. Most men have never paid for sex. In their survey, only about 6.2% had paid for sex in the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. High-frequency buyers, here's one where I really want to kind of highlight exactly what you're talking about. High-frequency buyers are more likely to have started at a young age and more likely than others to have had their first paid sex experience initiated by a friend, a colleague, a group of friends, or a family member, typically by the time they turned 21 years old. So again, we are those friends, those family members, those colleagues who may be introduced or may be introducing others to these sorts of things.
Got it.
And it's unhealthy. The same study, compared to other men, sex buyers were more tolerant of cheating on a significant other. 1/3 of active buyers strongly agreed that they do not want to do it again, a sentiment shared by most former buyers. And the final point from this that really stuck out in my mind was the main driver of sex buying included normalized beliefs about the commercial sex trade. Those normalized beliefs include prostituted women enjoy the act. Right. It is mostly a victimless crime, and buyers are merely taking care of their needs, and they're just guys being guys.
I think that's huge. I think the belief system around this, probably for the most part, is somewhat innocent, clearly naive, but really missing the truth about what's on the other side of this. It's not innocent, and it's not being enjoyed, and it is exploitive. And these are the things that I think a lot of men don't, and women too, don't understand clearly is actually behind this belief system.
Absolutely. You know, men mess up. We make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. And sometimes we're aware of our mistakes. Sometimes we know that what we're doing is wrong and we rationalize it. We say it's not that bad, or I deserve this, or I'm entitled to this, or everybody's doing it, or it's just guys being guys. Some of the sentiments you heard in that research. Or we justify it, saying, I didn't have a choice, or she did this other thing first,
right?
Or it's what's expected of me, or somehow the ends justify the means.
So we don't know any better sometimes in those times just to kind of rationalize away or try and explain away what we're doing. But in the process, we're really diminishing the impact and the truth of actually what is occurring.
Yeah, as I've been presenting on the topic of sex trafficking, most of these questions or side conversations come from guys after the presentation is done.
Yeah, I'll bet.
They don't want to ask. We don't want to ask these things in public. We may have shame about it. We may be embarrassed. We may feel put on the spot. We may feel like we're outing ourselves for something or the people around us. Yeah. And we have to be mindful of the impact of our actions, no matter what our intent is.
Well, what I love is that you're opening the conversation and you're beginning by simply educating people, which then allows people to get curious and start to question, wait a minute, I never thought about it this way. And what I love, you're presenting it in such a safe way that they're able to come up afterwards and have that conversation with you. Yeah, most conversations like this aren't in public where you raise your hand, but at least they can come up afterwards and begin to say, hey, this, I never thought about it this way, or here's what I've been thinking about, is this fit? And to be able to have kind of a plumb line to get a sense of what is right here and what is wrong and what may I not be understanding. So it's really cool to begin to kind of define and uncover for them these things that may be more subtle and not understood as clearly as you're making them right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate those opportunities for conversations. You know, something that I think gets missed in this, and I really want to be intentional to highlight this. Most men are awesome, right? Most men are awesome. And then funny thing, I went ahead and Googled people are awesome, because I remember a viral YouTube clip from 2011 that just showed a bunch of amazing acrobatic acts, balance, just amazing stuff. So I was looking for this video again and I Googled it. It took Google 0.47 seconds to find 11,300,000 results.
Awesome people, huh?
Of people being awesome. And then I remembered a video clip that my cousin sent to me about dad saves.
About dads. That's classic. That is absolutely classic. I've seen that. What a great one.
It's amazing. Instances where dads made incredible saves of their children. One dad, he's holding his baby girl in one arm and he catches a baseball home run in his other hand.
Brilliant.
You know, another is being sat upon by his school-age son. Meanwhile, his baby daughter is about to fall off the couch and he catches her by the diaper or the leg. Right. It's just amazing. You know, so I think that men are generally pretty great. But as we were talking about, we also mess up. Sometimes we don't know we're messing up. Sometimes we don't realize sometimes we don't realize the impact of our actions, no matter what our intent is. Yeah. And I think it's important that in this conversation, we avoid the shame, the blame. Yes, men have done shameful things and deserve the consequences of some of their actions and certainly deserve to be blamed for things. We have to take responsibility. But I also want to focus on the positive about the greatness of men and aiming for greatness as a man, which includes potentially changing our behavior based on what we learn. I spoke at one event and a military leader came up afterwards and said, listen, I just don't think my men realize the impact of what they're doing. I don't think my men are trafficking or contributing to the problem intentionally. Yeah. They're good men.
Yes.
And I just thought about, you know, so many people in my own life who have done things that are not so good.
I think what's really cool about that is in the process of not having to blame or shame or villainize men, and to realize that, you know, the best of the man is there. Oftentimes these things are taking place and they themselves don't understand the potential impact or contribution or where these things can go. Almost like, you know, the whole idea about the gateway drugs with marijuana. It's just a safe drug. It's a little high, but no, it opens up to other things, or there's other risks that come into play. And before you know it, you can be entrapped by or contributing to something that you did not realize beforehand, kind of things behind the curtain that you're bringing to their awareness in a non-shaming, non-blaming, non-villainizing way that allow men to kind of go, wow, I never knew. How safe is that? And so you're finding these guys being able to come to you and kind of expand an understanding of what you're really talking about.
Yes, I believe so. And the way that I host these conversations, you can tune in and ask no questions. I have all the questions already. Yeah. There may be more at the end, so we always have a question and answer time. But I kind of know a bit about what men are thinking about what questions may come up just because they have come up.
Yes.
So all of those questions that are sort of asked in the dark or in the hallway or whatever, wherever the outside space may be, I'm able to just bring in the answers to those questions and answer them so that no one really has to ask or be embarrassed about that conversation.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. We can preempt, you know, what the most frequently asked questions tend to be that are likely on the majority of men's mind. We kind of preempt the opportunity to say, hey, let me answer. So you just have to, you just get to listen. And you get to listen safely and take this in and ideally have it begin to reshape or maybe very much impact the way that you think about these things. May I ask just a couple of questions that you know most always get asked?
Absolutely. So one question or assumption that men have is the strippers, they're probably saving for college, right?
Right.
We say this, we've heard this somewhere, we think it must be true.
Yeah.
Is that the case? There may be some, you know, there may be some. We're connected at Hole in a Pool. We're connected with networks of survivors who have experienced life on that side of things. And so in preparation for a webinar that I host regularly at this point called Guy Talk, Fight Sex Trafficking, I asked our connections with the survivor networks, can you come up with three statements from survivors that they want men to know? One of the responses was, we're not saving for college. We're not keeping this money. I started into this to survive, to put food on my plate, to support my boyfriend, to support whatever may be. And I don't get enough money from this to save for college.
Right.
There's no way that would really happen. Another question comes up. Well, porn sites screen their material, right? There's no actual kids there, right? No, that's not accurate either. And I'll talk about pornography a bit, and I'm going to target Pornhub because Pornhub puts out an annual report. They provide their data every year. So I looked through their 2019 report, and I'll talk a bit about that. Another piece about this is there's a hashtag out there. There's a trending hashtag called Trafficking Hub. So look up hashtag Trafficking Hub. And they highlight stories of minors and people who did not consent to their videos being uploaded to Pornhub and other pornography sites. There are countless stories. There's one situation where there was a girl in Florida and she went missing for a year. When they found her, she was 15 years old. So a 15-year-old girl went missing in Florida and she was gone for about a year. When they found her, they found that her repeated rapes had been uploaded to various pornography sites, including Pornhub. So there were 58 videos of her being raped by a grown man available on Pornhub, where people pay to watch pornography. Another follow-up question. Well, I don't actually pay. I have a free membership or something like that. Fine. But you're contributing to a business that is making money off of ad space showing actual rape of children.
Yes.
Now, Pornhub, I know that they state that they review all of the content for age and consent. But there are so many hidden cam videos. There are so many amateur videos. The search for teens is consistently in the top 10 searches every year for them. And as guys seeking this stuff, there may be this assumption that there's no way this girl's actually under 18.
Sure.
Right? But even seeking out someone who looks young or tolerating that is unhealthy. Yeah. So as guys, we have to think about our behavior. We have to consider adjusting our behavior, not just passively, like I'm not going to search for teens, I'm not going to pay for a membership to a site that does this, but also taking action like I'm going to press them to verify age and consent. I'm going to write to my legislators to make it a requirement that they verify age and consent of what's being seen. And I'm going to call up my friends who are involved in this too. Like I have to have this conversation. One of the top things that comes up when we ask men, what's a manly characteristic? Things that come up are like strength, bravery. Sure. Fine, be strong, be brave, do something about this. Don't be passive, don't be a passive man. That does not demonstrate strength or courage at all. So that's a piece of what we really try to connect to.
You know what I love about this, Tim, is that you're in encouraging men to understand kind of the darker side of these things. On the other side of the coin, you're encouraging men to aspire to be the best of what a man can be. Protective and brave and courageous, standing up for what's right, advocating for those that can't advocate for themselves. And I really like that aspirational part of your message, because it's asking men to be the best that they've got the potential to be. Let's do it collectively, and let's address something that these women or other, you know, men or young boys that have been brought into this that can't advocate for themselves, they get to have a protective voice through us. Love that message.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that that's resonating. Another element of this, because guys sometimes want to respond by flexing, basically. We want to respond with muscle. We want to kick down the doors and save the kids and beat up the abductor and go confront the creepy white van, all of those sorts of things. I get that. I feel that way too. Sure. I've got to say that's not the healthiest response though. Here's why. Well, one, it's missing the mark. The National Human Trafficking Hotline puts out their data as well. And a couple years ago, they put out a report that stated about 7% of the sex trafficking they were seeing in their calls was through abduction. Only 7% could be attributed to stranger danger. Now, that said, stranger danger is important. It's a great message for our young kids to know. It's easy to remember. And we don't want to discard that 7%.
Right.
But a much more significant percentage of the trafficking that occurs happens at the hands of family,
yes,
friends, and significant others. And I know this is not just limited to a Hawaii broadcast, but there's some research in Hawaii that really helps to paint this picture. So Arizona State University and the Hawaii's Commission on the Status of Women put out 3 reports in recent years. And in one of the reports, they talked to 22 people who had survived being sex trafficked as children. So they talked to 22 survivors. They asked, among the questions, what was your relationship with your first trafficker?
Yeah.
13 said boyfriend.
Yeah.
13 said boyfriend.
Yeah.
The third study that came out surveyed people receiving social services from Child and Family Services, a great nonprofit here in Hawaii. Well, they received 363 responses to the survey. Among the questions was, what was your relationship with your first trafficker? 25.8% said family.
Yes.
24.7% said friend. And another 24.7% said boyfriend.
So it's really in their inner circle. It's not the stranger guy in the white van. It's not somebody coming around the corner. It's those that they know, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Those that they trust or supposed to be able to trust or are trusting that are betraying trust unknowingly.
And consider how difficult it would be to even recognize you're being trafficked. The youngest identified as having survived trafficking in this study were 5 years old. The average age of the children being exploited, the average age of the first exploitation was 11 years old. So think about being age 5 through 11 and someone that you know and love and care about and feel protected by is the one exploiting you. You're not even going to perceive this as exploitation. You're more likely to see this as a part of my family arrangement.
That's
special
right.
time with uncle. This is how my friends and I party. This is how my boyfriend and I get along. Like, that's how you're more likely to see it. And you're not likely to see this person as a trafficker. That is an uncle. That is a friend. That is a boyfriend. And so it's very difficult to talk about this. So as men, again, and as everybody, as the adults in these communities, not only correcting our own behavior, but we have to move to a place where we're becoming emotionally available and safe and non-judgmental and open to these conversations for our young people.
Yes.
We have to be able to defend them, but also to believe them and support them when they talk to us about this. I want to mention one other. There's a gentleman, Peter Qualiatin, who is a fantastic guy out there. He's in Massachusetts now, but he worked with some entities in Seattle, and he's really addressed demand. He's talked to guys. He addresses demand. He addresses accountability among men, and he leads groups for, they call it demand school, and many men who are convicted or charged with different sex crimes or trafficking might be sentenced to going to demand school. So he runs these groups, and there's a great article in GQ magazine, and he was sharing with one of his groups that he'd had a student, and a student never really took the group seriously. The student just kind of was like, all right, I'm here. This is part of my sentence. These sorts of things. He thought, this is nonsense. It was an accident, or my moves were justified. And then he was talking to his wife about it. He was complaining to his wife, and she said, you should listen to those guys. Because she had been sexually assaulted more than once, she told him, but had never felt that he was a safe person to tell.
Wow.
That would be a difficult thing for a man to hear. And response would be, of course I'm a safe person to tell. You can tell me anything.
Right.
But is that obvious to our children?
What I love about this part too, it's, you know, you're encouraging guys not just to aspire to be able to do something about this or to recognize their own contribution, but you're also encouraging them to aspire to be someone who could be available to be of help. I think most of us guys, you know, want to do have a call to arms and go beat up the perpetrators, you know, but you're saying there's a lot more bang for the buck when you actually make yourself available, have conversations with your friends, make yourself available to other family members where this tends to happen most, to really be that strong, safe man that a child can approach, or you can see in a child's life. Maybe there's some signs that are going on that you can pick up early and maybe begin to have a very safe conversation, because they don't know what they don't know that they're in. And you might be able to see these things and contribute in a way that could really be a lot more effective in beginning to bring some of these numbers down or to protect the children that we can be protected. I like that message.
Absolutely. Another follow-up question that comes from that is, how? How do I do that? Yeah. How do I be emotionally safe? And I can't answer all the questions. Yeah. But one thing that I strongly encourage for our parents and caregivers and other good adults who work with children is seek connection. Seek connection. And oftentimes, seek connection over correction. I really like saying it that way. Seek connection over correction. Because there are behaviors, there are things like that that might start to disconnect you from your young people. Another one is, don't wait on the talk.
Right.
A lot of us as adults think, I can wait till my son is 14 and my wife or my significant other can have this conversation with either my son or my daughter. If you're, I'm speaking from a dad perspective, my wife can take care of this with our daughters. I'll take care of it with our sons, and we're going to wait till they're ready around age 14.
Yeah. Not anymore.
It's not a healthy approach, because listen, it does a couple things. One, it sort of compartmentalizes that conversation. It makes it a one-time, unique, awkward thing, more so than it needs to be. Two, it's jumping into level 10 of your game.
Yeah.
That is a hard conversation.
Yeah.
Start early. In one webinar, a parent asked me if I had spoken to my son about sex trafficking yet. My son is 4.5 years old. I said, sort of, yes. She said, when did you start this conversation? I said, when he was 2.5 years old, bath time, when he could identify his penis and was starting to ask questions about it. I said, so what if someone else wants to see your penis? No. What if someone wants to take a picture? No.
Yes.
Who's allowed to touch your penis? Mommy, daddy, and the doctor when mommy and daddy are there.
Very good.
That is a much easier conversation than, listen, son, we need to talk about sex.
You bet.
Right?
You bet.
Plus, it opens communication. It lets your son or your daughter know that you're available for these conversations at an early age. So suppose they stumble upon some pornography when they're 6 or 7 years old.
Sure.
Suppose they Google boobs because they're curious about boobs and they find hardcore sex and they don't know who to talk to about this. But you've already established a pattern that you're available for these conversations.
From a very early age. What I like about that too is we're waiting to 14. And most of the incidents take place between 5 and 11. We've missed the boat, and we've allowed our children to be vulnerable in ways that put them at risk, a great risk. You know, Tim, as men, we love to fix things. You know, we're kind of taught how to use hammers, and all we tend to see are nails. We want to fix things, and it comes from a very, very good place. I think part of the best of men want to fix and protect and to stand up and stand in for. So in this area, how do we fix this? Where do we come in?
Sure. And I'll play on some of the stereotypical male roles. Be brave.
Yes.
Initiate the conversation, but also be gentle, open, and non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Be protector. Ask questions, investigate, be open to learning, but also be loving.
Yeah.
Be strong.
Yeah.
This is hard. You can do this. Your young people need your strength. They also need your hugs. Be enforcer.
Yeah.
Contact the authorities. Work with law enforcement. Engage your lawmakers. Advocate to your school and to your community leaders. Be competitive. Make sure your home, your neighborhood, your school, your community, and your state are as safe as they can be.
Yeah, really. Be driven.
Be driven. As the men before us and the women created the world that we live in, do the same for the next generation. Make it better. Be proud.
Yep.
Exploitation is nothing to be proud about. But also be humble and be gracious to yourself if there are things in your life that you need to change.
Yeah, really good.
And be a breadwinner. Provide for your family. But do it both materially and emotionally.
Yeah.
And be emotionally tough. Fine. But also be emotionally available.
Yeah, I love those, Tim. Thank you for, you know, I know we're kind of coming to a close in our talk today, but what a nice way to define for us these aspirational qualities that we can actually achieve and be. We want to contribute as men. We want to make a difference as men. And I know that the strongest men have the ability to have the most tender heart. Those that are strong and capable, but also have this very tender and very approachable heart. All of the things you're saying right there that can allow us to come in and really be a presence in this whole world that is so very, very dark. We can really be an encouraging and loving light. I love that. Hey, before we go, give us a couple resources you'd love us to kind of take a look at, follow up with, and you'd recommend for us, please.
Sure. Well, first, our website, ho'olanapua.org. You can find out more about what we're doing here in Hawaii. You can find out more about the webinars that we're hosting. We're hosting 2 a week right now with various topics, including Guy Talk. You can find out about our mentoring and our groups, our advocacy, and all the things that we're doing. Good. Shared Hope International is another fantastic education and awareness entity, so sharedhope.org. The National Human Trafficking Hotline is just humantraffickinghotline.org. To report trafficking or to find out more, you can call 888-3737-888. Polaris Project, polarisproject.org. They work together, but they are the national clearinghouse for a lot of this information. So those are some ways to find out a bit more about trafficking. There are a couple others for guy-specific stuff, some of these topics that we talked about. Culture Reframed, www.cultureReframed.org. Jackson Katz, www.jacksonkatz.com. Demand Abolition is the source I cited earlier for the men who buy sex, so demandabolition.org. Yeah. And then Tony Porter has A Call to Men, another great resource. So those are some of the resources. I know it's a long list, but it'll get you started.
Fantastic. Tim, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate this time with you.
Again, to those listening to us today, thanks so much for joining us as well. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.